of opportunities for master's-level pharmacologists exist in the pharmaceutical industry, biotechnology companies, government agencies, research laboratories, and academic programs. Introducing the Master of Science in Pharmacology program from the University of California, Irvine, UCI. The knowledge acquired in the Master of Science in Pharmacology program would also benefit those seeking employment in industry or advancement in teaching, technical and scientific writing, patenting, or pharmaceutical sales and marketing. Fall registration is now open. Apply today at sites.uci.edu/mspharmacology to learn more and reserve your seat by June 15th, 2020. That's sites.uci.edu/mspharmacology and reserve your seat today. The deadline is June 15th, 2020.
You're listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network. Welcome to the V3 Podcast with Dr. Ann Arvizu. Medical affairs innovators are changing the game for business success and making the world a better place for our patients. On the V3 Podcast, we showcase the vision, the voice, and the value of medical affairs. Each month, join host Dr. Ann Arvizu, a globally recognized medical affairs subject matter expert and awarded biotech industry executive veteran, for powerful interviews with today's acclaimed innovators and founders who are leading the profession forward into a new era. These high-level conversations will leave you inspired and equipped with future-focused ideas for changing culture and making an impact. And now, here's Anne.
Hi, everyone. This is Anne. Welcome to this episode of the V3 Podcast. It's episode number 8, and this is the vision, the voice, and the value of medical affairs. Once again, I'm your host and the creator of this show, Anne Arvizu. Well, wow. Since my last recording, what a difference a few weeks can make, right? It's been something to watch and unfold this whole mess that we're in as a globe together, especially in the U.S. right now. Above all, I hope and wish you and your loved ones are doing great. I also hope that you are recalibrating your work and your life and the things that matter most. Health for me is paramount. It is one of those things that matters most because without it, we can't function. And out there, we know what's going on. We know what the news says, and we're in this industry. I just got off the phone with another business owner today, and I found out her niece's husband has just died. The man was 33 years old and had 2 kids. So literally, life is unpredictable right now. So you are still a human that has to do a job. And in some of our biotech companies, that pressure is really on you right now. We have an opportunity like never before, I believe, to create a mindshare scenario and link arms together to find solutions. Mini leadership and life lesson for you. Don't get bogged down in the how. Find the what and the why, and the how will emerge. If you're listening to this episode, you are lucky and you are blessed. If you are a healthcare worker on the front lines, like a physician or a nurse in the trenches right now, literally face to face with an unseen and uncontrollable enemy, or a pharmacist or other essential worker at a pharmacy or grocery chain, my hat goes off to you and my prayers go up for you. As a pharmacist myself, I chose the pharmaceutical industry right out of school, and I went directly into clinical research and development. Fast forward 23 years, and most of my career has been in medical affairs. And as a medical affairs advisor, I'm staying on the front line of what's going on in medical communications and medical information and across medical affairs functions and operations so that we can operationally quickly pivot to support the companies we work for in partnership and in the race for this cure, the vaccine or the product or the combo that finally beats SARS-CoV-19. In this episode, I'm bringing on another company owner like me so that we can brainstorm and discuss some creative ways and add value to you today so that you can benefit right now and start to implement something, maybe regarding navigating change or implementing a new project. Right now, maybe you are losing staff, or in this business unusual practice, you're ramping up staff or ramping up capabilities. So my guest today and I are going to talk about some ideas of virtual technology and platforms that you can use. My guest's name is Amy Robbie, and we've known each other for several years now. She's president and CEO of ExtendMed, a healthcare technology consulting company that engages healthcare stakeholders via its virtual platform, which helps clients act on the expert insights that they collect. ExtendMed deploys its private label platform to support clients' virtual advisory boards, poster sessions, publications, and symposia, and online focus groups and training, as well as clinical trial site engagement across a broad range of therapeutic areas. Prior to founding ExtendMed, Amy came from a hospital network setting, previously serving as director of corporate information at Rush University Medical Center. She graduated from Carleton College with a psychology degree and began her career as a sleep researcher, studying the role that dreams play in managing depression. While at Rush, Amy earned her MBA from the Kellogg School of Management at Northwestern University, and she served on the board of Health Information Management Systems Society. She's also held an appointment on the graduate faculty of School of Health Sciences at Rush University in Chicago, and currently guest lectures at Northwestern's University Kellogg School of Management on Business Leadership. And she owns her own company, and she's a Springboard alumnae and HBA member. So our lives are so parallel that I love talking with her. So right after the show, I'll give you a little debrief before I send you into the recording. But right after the show, I complimented Amy and I told her, I can tell she smiles when she talks. I hope today's conversation is uplifting to you and help gets you to generate some innovative ideas, some that you can maybe even start to put into practice immediately that could help in whatever situation that you're in, whatever therapeutic area you support, and whatever products you are bringing to life and to market, so that really our patients get the therapies that they need during this time, and that we don't overlook therapeutic areas that are not dependent or independent of COVID-19. We also agreed when we spoke after the recording that medical affairs should be proud of the fact that it's more in demand than ever, and we can all collectively rise to the occasion. So our companies are here to help. If we can assist you in any way, I'll leave all the links below that we mentioned and the companies we mentioned in the show notes so that you can find us. I think there's a link to an article as well for Medscape. So now, join Amy and I in progress and enjoy this episode. We hope it uplifts you. Hey, Amy, good to talk with you today. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Anne. I'm really looking forward to our conversation today.
I know. I love having conversations with you. And as our listeners have already heard, you're an expert in helping clients solve problems and advance their new treatments, like we both are. And right now, our whole industry is in a travel-restricted time. So I just want to dive right in and let's talk about today digital solutions, essential work that that people are doing, what is critical to the business of medical affairs, et cetera. So let me start with my first question to you is, how are you helping your clients right now solve problems? What are you seeing with regards to advisory boards, online elements that you help with, virtual engagements, et cetera?
Well, Anne, that's a great question. I'd say the biggest demand right now is for virtual advisory boards. Mm-hmm. We're seeing that clients really do some innovative executions there with how they're considering doing virtual advisory boards. Often, the driver these past few weeks has really been needing an alternative, needing a backup plan for an advisory board that was due to take place at a physical location on site between March and June. And what we're seeing from our clients is really how they are taking a sort of shifting a meeting from getting together over 2 days and working with an advisory group to reconstructing that and redesigning it to think about how they can engage synchronously in a virtual meeting, whether they're using their own, you know, WebEx, Zoom platform, that kind of a thing. And then being able to engage asynchronously as well, gathering insights beforehand, since we can't, none of us can stay on a virtual meeting for an 8-hour period of time. So really thinking about how to gather insights before the meeting, sending out a link to a discussion forum, maybe with a document, pre-reading materials for that meeting.
Yes.
Thinking about how they can engage. And so that's really been wonderful to see how companies are making some quick shifts and able to revamp and repurpose what was already planned to be able to make the most and use their external experts effectively. What
right.
have you seen in the market? What have you seen?
Well, something very similar to you, of course, Amy. I've seen, you know, on the MedInfo, MedCom side, some companies having to ramp up so quickly and not having the bandwidth to do so, where other companies are deprioritizing certain, you know, what would you previously call essential work, and now it's not essential anymore. It's what are we doing to take care of questions? What are we doing? How are we going to create new content for new products that are now coming to market? Think of Sanofi with what they have just received from the FDA as, you know, clearance for something that can treat COVID-19, and that's really, really very, very good that we have task forces going on for how our companies really moving into what's exactly necessary right now and what's no longer a priority. So companies are deprioritizing the products they're working for. And on the flip side of what you were just saying, hospitals are inundated. So if these KOLs are part of a hospital system, they might be pulled into a different direction right now. Some are laid off. Others are essential. It's just a new world that we're all moving into. So if a biotech needs our help right now, it's like we were talking about previous to this conversation, that it's the time that companies like ours can rise to the occasion. And I'm getting requests for things that we don't do. And they know my expertise in medical affairs operations, shared services. And they're like, well, can you write this protocol for clinical research? And can you do this? And can you get this content done for these SRDs? And it's a lot more than just a business case right now, because everybody's either pressed the fast forward button for companies that are working to create the solutions to the coronavirus situation that we're in, or they're taking a pause on other things. So other projects are being deprioritized. I don't know if you're seeing that as well.
Yeah, your point about deprioritization or shifting is great. And there's an example of something that I saw the other day with one of our clients that I really got a lot of value out of. So the client was on doing a patient advocacy virtual meeting. Mm-hmm. The initial opening, discussing with the patient advocacy groups, which all of the patients have breast cancer in this example, and some of them are also clinicians. And so assessing the group, how's everyone doing? How are you doing in this period of travel restrictions and isolation? And what came up was really a set of priorities and needs out of that meeting. Mm-hmm. And this is really, really important because it allowed the organization to shift some of its medical education grant structure to be able to fund some of these initiatives. So one nurse as part of this group said, you know, I'm really struggling because I had a critical retreat planned where I was really addressing some patient concerns, and this retreat was important to the patients I was serving in my community. Now I can't do that. So how could we help that individual move forward with doing a virtual retreat? Another person yes. said, I really need resources. I need to understand how I can connect with people. I'm feeling isolated. I'm not mm-hmm. getting the treatment that I can't go in for my regular treatments, or we're making alternative plans with my practitioners. How can I stay connected and feel less isolated and have access to some specific resources? So from there, we worked to think about how could we start offering resources and publishing them through this particular group. And then there was really a whole other discussion about not only getting patient advocates to be able to connect with one another in virtual format. So even thinking about how do I assess whether I have been exposed to COVID-19? And there's a great site out there. It's a human diagnosis app that allows you to address a series of questions and be able to figure out right away, do I mm-hmm. need to take this further? But things like that, and you know from your work in terms of you're sitting on the board of YMCA organizations too, mm-hmm. how community support structures can get together and really sort of make resources available. That seems to be fundamentally important, whether you're approaching this as a CEO of a pharmaceutical company
right.
or as the CEO of the Y.
Right, right. It's so true. And you're talking about, three really high level thought processes here. Is one, what are the expectations we can manage for the engagement with HCPs? Two is how can biotechs and pharmaceuticals rise to the occasion, establish good trust with each other through patient-centric actions? And then three, you talked about patient advocacy. And really a fourth point is leadership in general is leadership. And, as chair of the board of directors for the YMCA, it is tragic. I shared with you some of that with you personally, that we have a call Friday. I'm talking with the CEO on Thursday. One of the members of our board, I'm the chair of that board, and one of the members of our board is the CEO of Kindred Health in South Florida. And he's like, Ann, call me anytime after 7 PM because before that I can't. And he's on calls every day with the Surgeon General of Florida and then the health department of Florida. So they're giving feedback. The hospitals are coming together. They're working. They're overworking. Thousands of cases, cruise ships landing where we are. Obviously, state to state and city to city, it's different. But one of the hardest hit areas in our industry earlier in the year, if you saw that there were, pharma employees that are now in the emergency room with COVID-19. So it's a human issue right now. And so let's add some value today. Let's have some fun here. And why don't you walk us through the process of how can some of our clients create and move their advisory boards online? If they never reached out to us, what would be the essential elements that they would need to take? Maybe some of them, the technology they could use. So talk us through the planning and execution steps of an advisory board, and under what conditions are these type of programs moving forward in virtual format? What are you seeing?
Yeah, great question, Anne. I think that fundamentally, the first step in the process is to address the question of the essential nature of continuing to move forward with an advisory board. And maybe part of the restructuring is really something that you just addressed in your previous comment, which is thinking about maybe what we do in our advisory board, maybe we're gathering the same group of individuals together, but we're understanding how we can be help them to provide the patient supports necessary.
Yes.
Maybe we're taking a perspective of not being so product focused at the moment, but thinking of ways that we can offer support to both the healthcare professionals we're engaging with and also the patients that they're supporting. And so if that is the starting point, then that might help to define where these essential advisory boards should be held. And then you can start to address the objectives and the goals mm-hmm. and defining what your structure is going to be. I think part of the neat thing about thinking about virtual advisory boards as opposed to getting together at a specified point in time at a specified location is that these can take on the tone of being overtime. And so you can then structure what's critical right now as each day changes for all of us is the ability to sort of have checkpoints or touch points, if you will, that span over a month, over 3 months, over 6 months. Mm-hmm. And so as you think about redefining what your advisory board is, even thinking about how you might contract differently with the advisors, mm-hmm. defining Absolutely. A tone of we'd like to be able to engage with you on this critical topic over the next 3 months. Mm-hmm. And we understand that you're busy and we understand that your time is taxed. And so we're setting up a structure that allows you to join at some specified times to your point about the CEO or the board member of the YMCA, yeah. I can't meet you until after 7, or maybe it's even after 10, mm-hmm. but I could respond to other ways that you're engaging with me. So once you've thought about contracting for a longer term scenario, then thinking about how frequently do you want to be engaging and can I bring in, can I create a single sort of website portal structure where I could be engaging with you as an advisor in asking you questions on a survey, in asking you how to engage over through discussion and engaging with a whole group of people who may be responding at 5 in the morning or 10 p.m., or maybe they're responding globally from India or from the front lines in Italy and so forth. Yeah. But how can I engage with these different constituents in a supportive manner? Right. And then being able to share company resources. I think, part of the goal is to be able to help these groups. So as you hear that, it would really be helpful for me to have some quick answers to my immunocompromised patients and how they're going to continue to get care and what they should look for as signs and symptoms of COVID-19. Great. Well, those are resources we could share right through that same website that is engaging this group or this community of advisors.
That's great. And are you finding difficulty getting in touch with those advisors right now? I'm just curious.
We've seen, it's a great question, and we are really urging our clients to be communicative, transparent, sensitive, leader-like, yeah. and listening. And I think those are key words here because part of it is assessing that with the advisors is really gauging what is your availability right now? How can we be supporting you? We want to take a leadership role and here's how we're shifting this to really address your needs here and now. Are we on the mark? That conversation needs to happen, and it needs to be tempered, if you will, such that the advisors have the opportunity to say, now is not the time, or yes, I am committed, and thank you for asking, and thank you for shifting the priorities here to really address our current needs.
Right, and the needs are popping up so quickly, and people in companies where they're taking on new tasks right now are going to be inundated. So asking those questions is the best way to really glean the information you're looking for, or to really kind of help them, help the client company. That's one of the things that I'm seeing right now is that they come with a barrage of information and this, and it's sort of like you have to do almost on every phone call, a mini gap analysis. What's the important thing here? What do we need to take away from it? And, how can I help? And if I can't help, who can help? And so, companies like ours are partnering together right now, just the way the CEO and chair of the board for the Kindred Health System say that hospitals are banding together right now. They are no longer competitors in this environment. They are sending away patients to go to another hospital. Their staff are overworked. They're switching around shifts. Operations have become different. Business cases is one of the things that I'm being asked for. And that's very interesting. And then I'm asked for like random things, like somebody saying, can you write a clinical protocol? I'm like, well, we don't have a clinical protocol writer, but let me find out from one of my med writers if they can, right? So we're thinking outside the box and expanding temporarily from what we need to do. So with regards to this advisory board, I do want to get back to that and ask you one more question is, are you seeing any difference with outcomes regarding the difference of a face-to-face advisory board or a panel discussion at a nice conference versus these virtual engagements? Are you getting maybe even more targeted answers, or is it different?
It's different, but it's also more targeted, and it has the opportunity to iterate. So just as an example, I want to share, there's a great interview between Abraham Verghese, who is one of my role model physicians at Stanford, and the ER chair at that organization, Neera Ahuja, on Medscape. It was just published in the past few days, and it's a great article and interview. But what it shows in their conversation back and forth is really how iteration is so critical during this time in particular, because what answer we give today may have no relevance to the answer we provide 2 weeks from now.
Absolutely.
And so I think in this time, thinking about a way of being able to engage virtually and being able to have information up to the minute and changing it from yesterday to today to tomorrow is really essential to thinking about how we can support one another in this time. And to the point of the article, I think there's an example of two healthcare providers really addressing a need that a pharmaceutical company could help them fill, which is that we need training, we need protocols, we need someone to help us with scheduling and checklists and managing how we should function operationally to get through the next 3 months. And hearing that plea, there are lots of opportunities to organize advisory boards, take, you know, New York or Italy, that might be a week or two or three ahead of where we are in the US, or specifically at Stanford, and be able to share best practices and how we should be managing operationally. And it's something that I see a lot of organizations could pitch in and really take the concept of an advisory board and the concept of getting experts together and sharing that information almost real time online.
Yeah, absolutely. Real time is key, and it is changing up to the minute. Just last week, you know, we did a podcast on coronavirus, and it took a few days to get published. It was already old news almost by the time it gets published, and that for someone like me, that's really frustrating. And in our industry, we don't have time for yesterday's news. It has to be today and what's going on today, especially in critical care. And we keep talking about COVID-19, but our industry serves every rare disease, every, you know, disease known to man. So if there is a cure for it, or if there is a mitigation for it, that's what we do in pharma and biotech. So the show must go on for many other industries. Are you seeing any industries taking a hit right now? Any particular product areas? I'm just curious.
You know, I think your point is really important. We do need to go on, and because there is so much focus on COVID-19, but I think of, you know, there are patients dying today from breast cancer. There are patients dying from other rare diseases, and the show can't stop for those people.
Exactly.
And so I think you're absolutely right that they're, you know, defining essential does not mean it has to be labeled COVID-19 or we can't talk about it. I think quite the opposite. I think there are absolutely essential aspects to continuing our search and advancement in across the board in terms of therapeutic areas and diseases that need to continue as best they can. I understand that clinical trials are, in generally speaking, it's very difficult to bring patients in. But again, there I'm seeing innovation with some of the ways that using smartphone apps and so forth, patients can record their own quality of life indicators, take some of their essential measurements and so forth, and be able to report that back to their clinicians remotely. So I think there, yes. I think we need to keep the show going on as much as we can, and that is not to distract from the very important work supporting urgent care in COVID-19.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. There is so much still to be done. It was almost like after I released that COVID-19 podcast, the day after we released an antibiotics or antibiotic resistant podcast, and I thought this is going to be eclipsed, but the ratings were pretty good. So people are still interested in something else if that's their cup of tea and if that's what they're working on. And that's really important. So the world is changed. It's going to continue to change as we know it. So you and I, as business owners and advisors and consultants to this industry, kind of almost have to have that hat on that has the crystal ball, you know, and we have to take that crystal ball down and look into it. And that's part of this podcast, the vision, the voice, and the value of medical affairs. It's what we help with. It's what we help them prove. You know, the value of medical affairs is critical. And it's still at that tipping point where medical affairs will get cut before sales, marketing, et cetera. And we know that commercial is king still in the industry's eyes, but in the patient's eyes, the work of medical affairs is critical. How do you anticipate that medical affairs industry engagement with HCPs, that how it might change even after the curve flattens, even if we go back to some form of what used to be normal and we got the coronavirus under control, which we will because we're working on it in this industry and I'm proud of that. But how do you see the world as we know it with HCPs might change or differ?
Well, I think that it's going to change very dramatically because what we're seeing as we all function at home virtually and engaging with one another is, number one, that it's possible. We've been pushed to do it. Mm-hmm. And so what I see is changing is that companies across the board are going to understand, do we really need to get together in a physical location for every single scientific advisory board that we have?
Right.
Can we be able to use healthcare professionals' time efficiently and conduct that as a 3-hour online meeting instead of having people come together? Can we save money in doing that? Can we execute those programs faster and share information quicker? And we're getting a taste of that right now because yes. We're all doing it, whether we're taking a CrossFit class online or finding some other ways to engage. So I see that in every industry, we're going to be questioning how much real estate do we need as company owners to be able to support our employees, and what is the value of when we should get together versus when we can engage virtually, and so I think that this is going to catapult the work process, the engagement process. We're going to be moving faster because we can do things virtually. And so we can post things in a more timely manner. We can react to things in a more timely manner. We can get together, and we don't have to lose all the value of the smiling at one another, because that can happen online.
Yes, it does.
And engaging and networking together in a way where we can make eye contact and read each other's faces and tell when someone is getting really excited about sharing some clinical research that they've discovered, and anticipating that and pulling them into the conversation. All of that can happen.
Exactly. And that's why Zoom stock is going up right now, because it's very effective. And, I want to ask one more question, and this is my selfish question, that you and I get together every so often, and we have a heart-to-heart as CEOs of companies in our industry. So I'm interested to hear, as an entrepreneur, what inspired you to launch ExtendMed? What problem were you trying to solve? Because I know when I launched RxCR, I had a problem to solve. I wanted to create the right drug to the right patient at the right time. I wanted to bring medical information without all the bureaucracy and get it done right. And I did that for many, many years. And I still do that in a different way, but we're in a different world. ExtendMed, when did you start, and what problem were you trying to solve at the time?
Well, I look forward to answering your question, but related to answering that question, I'm interested to know, hear from you, how much was from your experience on either, on sort of both sides of the organization? So you had represented pharmaceutical companies, yes, as an employee of pharmaceutical companies and working with medical information. And then you represented this independently running your own company. I'm curious to know how that experience that you had inside pharma led to deciding to become a leader outside serving that community.
Wow. Well, you know, it was, do you have 9 hours? Okay. So, but going back to when I started RxCR Communications, I had been the regional head of medical communications and medical information at GlaxoSmithKline. And as you know, at different iterations of my business, my husband, who you know, Jaime, was going to move to Chicago. And so I decided to pitch that company, which was Baxter and then Baxalta, and say, hey, could RxCR, you know, work for you guys? And, you know, would that be a good fit? You know, do you need any contract help and whatever? I created like a mini proposal and a pitch deck. And then they said, well, we would actually really like you, you know, to hire you. So I went back in the industry. So for me, I took a pause of entrepreneurship for a little while, but whether I've come in or out of the industry different times and have been touch points to over a dozen companies, what I've seen is that I can do things so much faster on my own. And so I like being an entrepreneur, and there's nothing wrong with that. But I felt like I had all the solutions, and I can also coach someone where they can't coach themselves. Because when you're in the thick and you're in meetings 9 to 5, I used to joke that at 5 p.m. I started my job because the meetings finally stopped and the phones finally went quiet and I could go home and actually do my work or the slide deck that was due the next day, right? As a director who's a global director and running multiple departments, that's nothing to sneeze at. The people in these industries are busy. Lean and agile is a thing, as you know. So helping people do organizational design and just sorting it out for them and creating the process and plan and then helping them execute is so satisfying. So I don't know if you feel that as well. I mean, that's one of the problems that I think that we solved today. Back in 2004, it was so different.
Yeah, so ExtendMed was started back in 2000, where we really saw this need for companies that were focused on education, like academic medical centers and medical associations, to share the right education at the right time and the right format. And we saw the struggles with that. So I was, at the time, I was working at Rush University Medical Center. I was on the faculty of their health systems management program. And I was also a part of medical associations that were really struggling when they could only reach 30% of their membership at annual meetings. So seeing this challenge of how can you leverage this content and educational content that you have access to as the organization, whether it's a pharmaceutical organization or a medical association or an educational institution like an academic medical center, how can you take that and share it responsibly and respectfully with the right constituents at the right time? And that doesn't just mean thinking about didactic lectures that you could have access to, but really thinking about how you could make that engaging and informative and shared just at the right time so that a clinician who's in a hospital in a treatment setting has access to the information right when they need it to know, what about this comorbidity? How should I be managing this patient with this comorbidity and have access to it? So that was the need. And I saw that from the vantage point of being on the board of an association, working on the faculty at Rush at a very exciting time when they were selecting an electronic medical record system and being able to see these needs from these different perspectives really drove me to start the business. And yeah, I haven't looked back since.
Oh, I love that. Isn't business fun?
Yes, it is really, it's really great.
It is.
Hey, speaking of, I wanted to share a really exciting some exciting ways that I've seen our industry make some changes this past week. And one that just really stands out there. I don't know if you followed at all the organization HIMSS, but you know, it's a huge association targeting healthcare IT professionals, and it's very respected in the industry. I think the world of the organization. They had they were the unfortunate association that was heading to Miami, as a matter of fact, for their big annual meeting, and really had trouble making the call to cancel the meeting because it was just right, you know, coming at the end of February when it wasn't clear. You know, we have a much different vantage point at this point than we did at the end of February. And they canceled it 2 days before the meeting with a sort of follow-on note that at some point in the future we'll hold a virtual meeting. Mm-hmm. Well, I want to bring that up because this is the point we discussed earlier about leadership, about adapting and adapting quickly.
Yes.
And there is an organization called OneUp Health that, kudos to them, they saw this opportunity and they said, we're going to take that whole meeting that is, you know, managing tens of thousands of people, and we're going to put it online, and we're going to do it in one day, 24 hours. We're going to turn that meeting around.
Yep.
They lined everyone up. They set up Zoom meetings. They broadcast the entire meeting, and they did it independently. And there's opportunities like that, and there are companies like that who seize the day and innovate and offered a free meeting to all of those tens of thousands of attendees who really wanted to participate in the HIMSS meeting.
That's great. And Amy, would you provide us the links that you've mentioned today for some of these, you know, companies' names that you mentioned, and also the Medscape article? And of course, I'll include a link for ExtendMed as well. So if people need to come look for you, they know where to go. Would you provide those others as well?
Of course, I'd be glad to.
Wonderful. It was amazing talking with you today, as always. And thank you for your time today on the V3 podcast.
It was a pleasure, Anne. Thank you for the conversation.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the V3 podcast, part of the ACMA podcast series in collaboration with the Pharmacy Podcast Network. For all of the ACMA podcasts, please go to acmapodcast.com.